Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at RSS.com.
Hello all, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whenever you're watching this podcast. Welcome to the Goddess Project podcast. I'm Dr. Carla Ionescu, and today I'm going to take you through the Mistress of Animals. So this has been something I've been thinking about for some time. My next book on Artemis is going to be, my third book in the series is going to be on the Mistress of Animals. I was going to do Artemis in Sicily, because I'm going to Sicily in May and I'm running a retreat or a tour there to the Artemis temples and some of her famous fountains, the fountains of Diana and things like that. But I don't know why the Mistress of Animals continues to call to me. Like I can't get away from her. I don't even know how to explain to you. So I'm doing a bunch of Mistress of Animals things. First of all, I'm doing a course that's starting on Sunday for 6 weeks every Sunday. So it's a live on Zoom course on the Mistress of Animals because I want to have a setting where we can dive deeper into these conversations, some of which we're going to touch on today. And also because I want to have the motivation to, or the inspiration to read the books. And I mean, I've been deep down in academic texts about the Mistress of Animals. You think there was a lot, there isn't that much, but then there is in a variety of different languages as well. So it's taken me some time to translate some of the texts, the academic papers from different conferences that are sort of, you know, all over the place. The one that I'm going to go through today after I record this podcast is in Russian. So that's going to be fun. A dictionary and then Google Translate. We'll see how that goes. Mostly focusing on Kybele and her relationship with the Mistress of Animals, which ironically we're not touching on too much today. But I did a whole episode on Kybele, so please feel free to scroll through that and watch. And also next week, I'm doing a workshop on Kybele, which is on a Saturday, and we're going to do a deep dive there on the artifacts of Kybele, the museum artifacts of Kybele, of which I have a ton of pictures and I want to talk about. So there's a lot of things happening this month, and I don't know if that's because the snake year is ending and the horse is galloping, and I am a tiger in the Chinese astrology, and apparently tigers and horses are besties. So this is going to be a fun year, guys. But also, I feel like there's an excitement in the air. I know there's a lot of terrible things that are going on in the world right now. But I don't know. There's also this excitement, this like fizzy kind of energy under the skin and in our hearts, almost like we don't want to believe that good things are coming, almost like we're, because we've been so traumatized by the last few years, I feel, and this is, I can only speak for myself and those around me, that there is like this wanting to hope, that the hope is fizzing and we're like, oh, should I? And so for me, despite the devastation that's going on in the world, which is very real, and there are moments in the day when we pause to think about that and support and help, then there are moments in the day when we have to focus on the light. We have to. And I'm finding myself in a position of encouragement more and more with my university students, who are very young. And I feel very protective of their mental health. I feel very much pulled, and the mistress of animals, I don't know why, is very much connected to this. Perhaps it's because of nature, perhaps it's because she's such a dominant, unrelenting character, divinity, that I feel like I feel pulled for it to inspire them, to protect them. I feel pulled to write poetry. I feel pulled to write different scenes from my life. Anyway, she's really messing with me, the Mistress of Animals, and not just in her Artemisian form, which we're going to look at. Yes, I think in her Artemisian form, because Artemis and I are so deeply intertwined. So I think that in her Artemisian form, she could, how do I say this? She is a force that I can rely on, but also a force that knows me well enough to reach like into my chest and pull me forward. I just felt the need to do this course on the Mistress of Animals, despite the fact that I know this is maybe not a very popular divinity, and despite the fact that I know this class will be very small, which I'm actually a little excited about because I like a small, intimate space to have discussions, deep discussions, and dive into material. I really like that. I really miss that, actually. But for those of you who cannot take the course, or it's just not the right timing for you, I thought that I would do a podcast to offer something for everyone whenever you get here, whenever you land here. So whether it's today, Friday the 13th, whoo-hoo, the luckiest day so far of the year. I'm very, very excited about the number 13, which is the number of the divine feminine. And Friday, and just that whole. In fact, I've been talking to so many of my students about how this is such a lucky day, and that they should go out and like bask in the sun and meditate a little bit, and maybe buy a lottery ticket or plant something, depends on where you live in the world, because 13 is such a powerful and lucky number, and I know it's been beat up by the patriarchy. We've really been damaged across the board, across gender, biology. We've really been damaged by the system that is now crumbling and falling apart. And because I teach so much history, particularly Greco-Roman history, I'm always doing some kind of a lecture at the cusp, or the crack, or the pit of when an empire breaks apart. But the truth is that when we look at, for example, the Peloponnesian War for the Greeks and the Athenians and the Spartans, and we look at the Romans falling apart later on in the 300s, and we look at the Ottoman Empire falling apart later on, and we look at the British Empire falling apart, and now the American Empire falling apart. The truth about all of that is two things. Number one, it takes a couple of hundred years for an empire to crumble. So we are living in the crumbling. Are we mid-crumbling? I don't know. You tell me. But it takes a little while. And so for those of us who are living, limited human lives, 50, 70, 80 years.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
It seems like it's not happening in our lifetime. And so I try to think about the Romans and the Greeks from back then, who were probably in the middle of this crumbling as well. And they were thinking, oh my God, like, this is the worst of times. Everything's falling apart. And it was, and it was. But then there's usually an upward swing. Whether we're going to see that upward swing in our lifetime or not, I'm not sure. But I'm hopeful. So that's number one. Number two, the most devastating aspect of being a historian or studying history, as many of you do, is seeing the patterns of repetition, particularly in this system, which is the patriarchal system. And so you see the rise and fall, rise and fall, rise and fall, and it's always the same. It's always the same causes. It's always ego. It's always greed. It's always the battles of men. Gentlemen, no offense, but that's just how it is. And so men who are in power ruin it for everyone. Other men, other women, everyone. all across the board and the spectrum. And so one of the things that I'm getting really fed up with, and I think you are too, is that I'm tired of recognizing the pattern, you know? I think it's time for a new system. I think it's time for a new system. And perhaps if you like, we can have a whole conversation about what systems are available to us to move into once this one finishes dying. You know, because this one is dying and the dead man is holding on real tight, trying to convince us that things are terrible and nothing will ever be great again. And that's nonsense because things will be even greater. So I think there are a lot of systems that we could use moving forward away from patriarchy that will benefit everyone again across the board. And I think the Mistress of Animals is an entity or a symbol, maybe that's better, that could really inspire us to move forward or how to move forward. And so hopefully you will enjoy this talk. So if you're new here, I'm sorry. If you're new here, welcome to my rant. If you're new here and this is your first episode watching of the Goddess Project podcast, hi. I don't edit these. I just talk like I would normally if I was in class. And so you may get some rants. Hopefully you enjoy some of the rants. You don't have to agree with my rants, you know. It's not a do or die. And so, and I don't edit them, and there will probably be a lot of pauses where I'm thinking about things. I also have a bit of a neurodivergent brain, so my brain goes beam, beam, beam everywhere. So hi and welcome. And hopefully that's something that you enjoy. So I'm gonna share my slides with you. And hopefully I'm not in the way of, so I was sharing my slides a couple of days ago with my students. Let's see how that goes. Okay. Hopefully that goes all right. And I one of them came on and they were like, Carla, you are in the way of the writing. But for these slides, for those of you who are watching on YouTube, for these slides, I've only just put the title, so no specific anything, so that you're not struggling to see anything. And for those of you listening to me, then it doesn't matter what slides I'm on and what slides I may not be on. So we're going to touch a little bit on the Mistress of Animals, particularly we're going to look at sort of the origin story and some of the ways in which she develops, and of course some of the ways that she develops into Artemis. And then I'm also recording an after the podcast for my members, Patreon members, and YouTube members. So, after the podcast, as you'll see, is 20 minutes, half an hour additional recording on something very specific, and something that really interests me. And that is also going to be up today, after this podcast goes up, after this episode goes up. So, I want to invite you to join me. To become a member, both either through Patreon or the Artemis Center or YouTube, so many ways to come join us and watch that. But let's begin at the beginning. When we talk about the Mistress of Animals, we are not starting with a myth or a story, right? Which is really fascinating. So the Mistress of Animals does not have an origin story, and she doesn't have a mythology, and she doesn't really have a pantheon. I mean, we'll see. She's in numerous pantheons and none. No, that doesn't make sense. She's in numerous pantheons, but no real roots in one or the other. What we're looking at here is very new and interesting because it's just an image. It's a symbol, but it resonates in such a way that we see her across cultures and across time. So normally she's shown as a figure, a female figure, frontally upright, usually composed, and she is often holding animals either like in her hand or, as you see here in this image, just her hands are over the animals on either side of her. So often they're lions, sometimes they're deers, sometimes they're birds, two birds, or different composite creatures. The animals are not running. This is important when we think about symbology. The animals are not running. They are attacking. They are. So, for example, in this image that you see here of this Boeotian vase, it looks like there's a, I don't know, a wolf and a lion, I want to say. Okay, maybe a deer and something else. It looks like their mouths are open. So it looks like they're attacking or it looks like they're roaring. But of course, they're not attacking her. She is actually holding them. So this posture matters because this posture signals control. It doesn't signal affection. It doesn't even really signal like nature worship. It signals authority and control. Okay. So not necessarily companionship. So we'll see how that changes. This image appears across a wide geographical range, long before the classical period. We see it in Eastern Mediterranean, we see it in the Aegean, we see it in Anatolia. We really start seeing it from the Bronze Age and on. So, one of the things that I want us to think about is we don't want to give her a name. And this is why I like the name Mistress of Animals. We will later call her Artemis, but we will also call her Inanna Ishtar. There's numerous interpretations of this goddess. Now, in the course, I'm going to start at the very beginning and we're going to look at some of the patterns of her worship or her depiction. But I think for the purpose of today, one of the things that I would like to share with you is just
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Some of her foundational origins or depictions where they first started, and some of the cultures. So, for example, we can look at the Minoans, the Mycenaeans, the Akkadians. All of these cultures had a similar grammar of power, a symbolic grammar of power that repeated often way before the Greek Artemis appeared. Now, the Greek phrase that most people associate with the Mistress of Animals is Patnia Theron, which is usually translated as Mistress of Animals or Lady of the Wild Beasts. And so the word Patnia is an old and very heavy term in Greek, right? In the lexicon, it denotes a mistress or a lady or goddess, but a mistress. I think mistress is the best fit. There are always divine overtones, though. And it appears often in poetic and cultic contexts rather than everyday speech. Okay? The second term, which is Theron, is really referring specifically to wild animals, creatures that live beyond cultivated and domesticated space. So, taken together, this phrase does not describe a gentle nature goddess. Yeah. This is a divinity that has authority over what is untamed. So, if you've ever been in untamed nature, and if you've just ever been in the wild, you understand the power, the it's not power. It's almost like a raw, I mean, it is power, but it's like there's a raw, like roughness to it. I don't know. The English language sometimes just doesn't have the right words for all of the. I mean, so we say it's wild. Yes, we say it's untamed, and all of these words fit, but there's something that moves through our bodies when we're in the wild that feels primordial, right? That feels like a knowing that is unexplainable. Our earliest secure literary appearance of this title, Patnia Theron, comes from Homer's Iliad in chapter 21. And I'm going to do an in-depth reading of that in after the podcast. But you can for sure look up book Iliad 21 and see that there's a clash of the gods on the battlefield and Artemis confronts Apollo. her twin brother, and she accuses him of cowardice, of refusing to fight Poseidon. And in that moment, Homer puts words in Apollo's mouth and calls her Potnia Theron, you know, this mistress of the wild, this untamed goddess, right? It's important because this moment or this epithet functions as what we would call comprised knowledge. So Artemis does not need an introduction there. She's identified through this title that evokes mastery over dangerous liminal space. Maybe that's another word for the wild, of course, is dangerous. Yeah. So the wild for the mistress of animals is not picturesque nature. It is where humans lose control, right? And so we'll see this in the Homeric hymn to Artemis, Homeric hymn 27, where she is called Agroterra and she is described as moving through mountains and forests. So Artemis really absorbs the characteristics, the mantle of the mistress of animals. And she's celebrated, worshipped, celebrated, feared, all of these words, because the mistress of animals had been associated with the sovereignty of creatures and wild places for so long across this wide spectrum that everyone would have recognized what kind of power and authority Artemis is embodying, right? And so it's important that we recognize how Potnia Theron is attached to Artemis. At the same time, though, in modern scholarship, the same phrase is often used broadly to describe a visual motif, which is really one of the challenges, I think, for me as a scholar, as I'm putting together this book, because there is just so much of this motif of a goddess holding on or standing on animals. And it's important, number one, that I don't always associate her with Artemis, particularly if we're up in the Balkans or if we're down in the Middle East or if we're, you know, in some other place in the world. There is actually a mistress of animals in Japan. I was reading an article about that this morning. And so it's important that I understand and that you understand by me sharing this information with you, that that is not Artemis, right? That those figures in those other spaces outside the Med is often not Artemis. Every now and then, you know, if you're up north in the Balkans or the Celts or, you know, even in the Middle East, you may get some Artemisian overlap, maybe. But what fascinates me the most is that the figure of the mistress of animals is so cross-cultural and cross-temporal. And so this is why I need to do a deep dive, and hopefully you'll want to do a deep dive with me, because it's important that I separate these stories, but at the same time, find the patterns, because there are some very, very clear patterns that shape the way that this divinity, this symbolic figure, inspires and influences and was worshipped by other cultures, and also how she becomes associated with Artemis. So if we step back from Homer and move into an earlier time, the mistress of animals stops being a literary figure and becomes overwhelmingly visual. Oh, no. I just realized that one of my images of her didn't make it through when I changed this lecture into a PowerPoint. But that's all right, because you can see some of the figures that are up here already. And so in the Bronze Age, power is not explained through narrative in the way that later Greek myths explain power, right? Power in the Bronze Age is shown. So across the Eastern Mediterranean and the Near East, we repeatedly encounter female figures whose grasp animals directly. Okay? And these animals are often symmetrically positioned on either side of her body. Sometimes they are lined up straight. Sometimes they go far wide. Sometimes one is facing up and one is facing down. And scholars believe that that imagery also had some kind of symbolic meaning to the people who understood it. So it's not decorative, is what I'm saying. That however this imagery is produced, it communicates a kind of order imposed on forces that would otherwise be chaotic. But we don't yet exactly know the true meaning. So, what is the difference between the goddess that holds two lions versus the goddess that holds two geese? Or what is the difference between the goddess that's holding a deer and a lion, or a deer and a dog, versus a goddess that's holding upside down birds, or upside down deer? And lots of scholars have attempted different interpretations, and we will too, perhaps in our course, because we'll have time to dive deep into some of these images and talk about what the meaning of the animal might have been in this culture, and then what is the meaning of the goddess holding these animals in such control and authority also mean. But all of that is speculation, right? So, for example, on Crete, which is the image above me, Minoan seal stones from the middle to the late Bronze Age provide some of our clearest examples. The seals are very, very tiny, and they're portable objects, often used to mark some kind of ownership or some kind of authority. And many of them, I mean, I've chosen here maybe just actually all three of them, though the one, the pink, the one that looks a little bit more pink is Mycenaean. But often they have the female figure holding some type of animals by the neck or the forelegs. There is no weapon. This is very important. You can see in some of these images that the goddess has horns, which are symbols of power. And in the one particularly from Minoan Crete, there's also the double axe symbol on top of her head. So the mistress of animals holds symbology in a way that is, I think, the most decorative, perhaps. That is, most gods and goddesses have some type of symbology with them. They usually hold something or they're standing on something. But the mistress of animals, I find, has such a plethora of symbolism around her. And I think this is why she's such a powerful, impactful figure, because it's like you're looking at this goddess, this being, and you cannot deny that the power that she holds is magnificent. Okay. Add to that the fact that the control over the entire scene is through her body itself. So the figure's power is assumed, it is not argued. There's no argument here that this figure in the middle holds power in this image. Okay. Now, we don't have Minoan mythological texts, so we don't have any explanation. We have not yet, of course, translated Linear B. So we don't have texts that explain these images. Okay. So everything we have is interpretation. And I believe, actually, that even in the Minoan period and the Mycenaean period as well, and perhaps even a little bit later, interpretation was key. That is, people didn't rely on literary text to tell them the meaning of something. So interpretation from a visual material context is more important than a story. Yeah. What we can say for sure is that these figures appear in administrative and elite context. So these are not marginal figures. They're not, women worshiping in the wild and sort of, scratching things into stone. They belong to the structures of authority. And so all of the men and women who participated in the community in the Minoan period would have used this figure as the ultimate authority. If we move a little bit east, the pattern becomes even clearer. In Mesopotamia, for example, female deities were associated with, of course, power, fertility, and warfare. And they were often seen with lions. So we see this with Inanna, for example. There's a whole episode on Inanna if you'd want to do a deeper dive on that. Inanna Ishtar, of course, later the Akkadian Ishtar. But in visual representations of Inanna Ishtar, let's say, in the 3rd and 2nd millennia BCE, She stands with lions. She's often resting her foot on an island, and she's sometimes grasping the lions directly. Okay. So the lions are not her pets. This is a symbol of dominance, an emblem of dominance, actually. And primary texts reinforce this imagery, right? So in the Sumerian hymns to Inanna, the goddess is repeatedly described as terrifying, overwhelming, I love that word, and capable of subduing both gods and humans. And we know in the hymn of Inanna and Ebih that she destroyed an entire mountain that refused to acknowledge her authority. So the mountain is personified as wild and resistant, and Inanna's victory is framed as the triumph of divine order over untamed force. So sovereignty is proven in the ancient world through the mastery of what resists control. Does that make sense? So sovereignty is proven through the mastery of what resists control. And so, if we follow that line of thought, the mistress of animals is the epitome of sovereignty and authority, right? In Anatolia, for example, especially in the later Bronze Age and early Iron Age contexts, we encounter this re the, these type of reliefs, these type of figures in reliefs sculptures. We see goddesses flanked by animals, sometimes birds, sometimes lions, sometimes composite creatures. And often these figures, the mistress of animals figures, appear in a boundary zone. So on rock reliefs, on gateways, on places where control over space is symbolically asserted. Okay. So again, the animals function as signs of liminality. The goddess stands where different worlds meet. It's such a powerful visual language of boundaries, of liminality. It's more than just theology. So it's more than just worshiping the mistress of animals. It's really an authority that is material. By that I mean, her authority is very much in the material world. You know what I mean? I don't know if that makes sense. And so this is some of my challenge with the Mistress of Animals, because my brain visualizes and feels the power of this entity. And yet, the word.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Words are not enough. Are not enough. And so I think this is why she's challenging me, because I want to get the words out. I want to express the authority, the female divine authority that she has, that is linked, to protection, to the wild, to danger, to etc. In a way that you feel what I feel. And sometimes that comes easy. It certainly comes easy when I'm talking about Artemis, because Artemis is very much the only figure, I think, that is capable of occupying this position as we move forward through time. She's really the container, the divine representation that could really hold this overwhelming power. And so, to me, talking about Artemis in that way, as many of you know who've either taken courses with me or watched many of these episodes, or come to the workshops, that's easier for me to express. I don't know why. That's interesting. Because Artemis to me feels like that, like the epitome of embodiment of the sovereignty that is overwhelming. I like that word. I'm going to use that word a lot today. But not overwhelming in a negative way, overwhelming in a way that she just pours out of the container that we've built for her, the Greeks had built for her, because she just embodies everything and everyone. And so she's able to absorb goddesses and primordial goddesses into the container, and then she's able to pour out of that container. And in many ways, as many of you know who have read my recent book on Artemis of Ephesus, then she is able to squeeze herself. Yeah, she's a shapeshifter. She's able to squeeze herself into like the Virgin Mary and survive those dark ages of the last couple of thousand years of humanity, especially in Europe and the Mediterranean. And then again, pour out of that. Yeah. Oof, the metaphors today, but I don't know. I mean, it's powerful. I feel like it's, and so that makes sense to me. That feels right to me. But if we step back to just the Mistress of Animals herself as this primordial emblem, I find putting that into words a little more challenging, and I find that I need to do more like detailed research, and map it. That's actually the exact word. My brain needs a map of this primordial entity, so that I can both visualize but also organize my thoughts about her. So I'm giving you a bit of a sort of chronological map today, but it's quick, so I'm sorry. It's a bit quick and it's sort of limited, but hopefully it will pique your interest, which is really my goal for today. So, by the time we reach the archaic and early classical periods, the image of a goddess holding or flanked by animals is so familiar that it no longer needs explanation. Okay, so the familiarity can mislead us though. Modern viewers sometimes look at these scenes as symbols of harmony with nature, but I just want to make sure that we're clear that ancient evidence points in a different direction. So, in Greek thought, for example, wild animals were thought to occupy a charged position. So, they live outside of the oikos, outside of the cultivated land. They represent danger, unpredictability, excess. And for the ancient Greeks, there was the sort of civilized city space and then the wild, frightening outside space of the city. So control over animals is therefore a claim about power over boundaries, especially the boundary between the human world and what resists it. And I think this is the beginning of our tension with nature that is, again, as a result of the patriarchy, that somehow nature has to be forced. It reminds me of Francis Bacon, and who was one of the Enlightenment thinkers, the early scientists, who talks about nature as something to overcome, as something to like bend to your will. And as you are building cities, for example, even today, all of us live somewhere. I mean, I luckily live in almost a forest, but I've lived in cities for a long time. And when you're building cities and when you're expanding cities, you're really pushing the boundary of nature, right? And you're pushing out animals, you're taking down trees, you're really doing damaging destruction. The ancient Greeks would have felt that still, even though their cities were not so devastating as ours are, and certainly not as pollutive, but they would have still been a disturbance to the natural way of doing things. So they would have seen nature as the resistance against so-called progression or civilization. Yeah. And this is a very masculine ideology, and the masculine idea of overcoming, of I don't know, pushing your physicality onto whatever it is that you're trying to build. It's not the only masculinity, of course. There are very wonderfully productive aspects of masculinity. But in this case, at this point in time, we are really in a conquering kind of masculinity. And so the idea then is that everything I expand into, I'm conquering. And then everything that's in my way, I'm destroying. This is the kind of masculinity. I mean, I don't want to call it toxic masculinity yet, because I think toxic masculinity today is really the right phrasing for what's going on for a lot of young men, unfortunately. But I think at this time in ancient Greece and Rome, we're talking about a, let's use the word conquering masculinity, or conquering attitude. And there are plenty of powerful women who also absorb that conquering masculinity and also participate in the hierarchy. And in the patriarchy. So what we're seeing is this tension, almost battle between the human world that is moving in this particular system and the natural world that has always been, that is, of course, resisting it, because nature has always known that we're doing the wrong thing. She's probably been watching us for some time, saying, what the hell are these humans doing? And when are they going to disappear? Yeah, I've got the worst virus. It's called Homo sapiens sapiens. When can I get rid of it? Yeah. So the mistress of animals then becomes a complicated figure, because she's the divine feminine, but she controls, right? She controls, she has authority over wild animals. Yeah. And wild animals are not just neutral living beings, but they are actually creatures that are defined by their untamed state. So to rule over them, you can't be gentle. You have to impose order, where order does not naturally exist, okay? So the visual evidence, especially the one where she's holding on to birds, I find that one sometimes the most evident of this. This posture, this really schematic posture, is fascinating, because the control is there in her hands. The animals are not struggling, right? So the image is already showing you. So this is not a battle, you know, like we see Hercules, for example, often fighting some kind of an animal in ancient art. And you could very clearly see the battle. Or when we see Artemis punishing Actaeon, and, you know, he's being torn apart by animals, very much a battle. What you're seeing with the Mistress of Animals is a figure that is standing still and fully, fully in control, okay? Fully in control. There is no morality. There's no value being or value system being imposed on this picture. What we're seeing is an enforcer. That's a weird word. Because I think that for so long we've associated goddesses with, and the divine feminine with, softness. Mistress of Animals really challenges that for you and me, right? Like, I mean, I already am deeply connected to a goddess that is an enforcer and has been an enforcer for a long time. And there are aspects of that that are difficult, because, you know, I'm not really an enforcer unless you mess with something that really, really, really would push my softness into, I don't know how to say this gently. I don't want to be mean. But anyway, but I don't see myself as an enforcer. Well, that's not true. I don't know if that's true. Because, yeah, that's not true. Maybe, okay, totally side rant here. But yeah, maybe. Maybe that really resonates with something. Because, no, you're wrong. I was just thinking, I had a conversation a couple of days ago with a friend of mine, and we were talking about, you know, the end of the world, you know, and the apocalypse. And she said to me, you know, Carla, if the end of the world comes and there's some kind of zombie apocalypse or something, you know, some kind of an apocalypse where we're getting attacked, where people, you know, are changed or whatever, you know, it's the end of the world. She's like, I'm just going to walk outside my door and just give myself to the zombies. And while I love my friend very much, there was a part of me that went, oh, no, no, no. Because if there's a zombie apocalypse tomorrow, no, I'm packing up guns and knives and putting on my leathers and making a team, and I'm not going down without a fight. And then a part of me kind of went, could I be friends with someone who would just walk out and give up, you know? So what I'm saying with the sideline story is that I think there is a stream in my spirit that is very much the enforcer. I think I've just kept her at bay for a long, long, long time. And that's okay. And that's okay because, you know, then when I thought about it, I thought, but you know what? We're not in a zombie apocalypse. And I really like my friend, and she's a really good human. And we're not in a zombie apocalypse, Carla, you know? So it was this kind of conversation. But that brings me back to Artemis and the Mistress of Animals. There is something very clear about an enforcer goddess that also can be quite gentle and soft, but very protective, that I guess really resonates with me. And a lot of things that have happened to me and in my life. But that all of that is sort of put behind because as a professional and as an academic and as a human, you want to forward face the softness of who you are, the collaborator of who you are. And so the Mistress of Animals for me, I think, is really bringing up these aspects that I have put, you know, aside because I haven't needed to reach for them. And perhaps also because we're now living in an interesting time where a lot of our conversations are about what happens when the hard time comes? Like, where do you stand? And what is the appropriate response? You know, is the appropriate response fighting back? Yes, sometimes. Is the appropriated response collaborative and softness? Yes, sometimes. So I think it's brought back a lot of that discussion. And so one of the things I've been thinking about, sorry, I'm still on the sideline, but about this book is that I would like to somehow incorporate in this book academic, mythological, historical knowledge, and perhaps some of the artifacts, with my own sort of personal journey. So it's a little bit of poetry, a few short stories. I don't know exactly how that's going to work because I've never seen anything like that, and I don't know exactly. And it's also a bit vulnerable, like, you know, again, but I feel like this is the time for us to share our genuine, authentic experiences, especially connected to a goddess, or the divine feminine, or especially connected to finding strength in the divine feminine, and softness. Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. Hopefully that makes sense to you all. So again, just having sort of random thoughts. Sorry, I'm taking you for a ride with me. Yeah. By the archaic period, so what you see behind me is a linear B translation of mistress of animals, of the term mistress of animals. By the archaic period, the older mistress of animals framework becomes more and more explicitly attached to Artemis. But the attachment is not clean or uniform, right? What we see here is a kind of selective inheritance. Artemis takes on authority over wild animals and liminal spaces, but she's repositioned within Greek civic religion, right? So like the Greeks politicized their pantheon. One of the visible changes that we see is posture and equipment. So in earlier Near Eastern and Bronze Age images, control is enacted through the grasping of the animals. But in Greek iconography, especially from like the 7th and 6th century BCE, Artemis increasingly carries a bow. She is increasingly accompanied by deers or dogs, and sometimes a bear here and there. So this is not actually a softening of her power. It's just a
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. You know what's slower than a pace car? Waiting at the car wash. That's when I fire up Chumba Casino. It turns those slow minutes into fast fun. With new games every week, you'll never get bored. Next time you're stuck in the slow lane, speed up with Chumba. Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Rearticulation of her power. Authority is exercised more through precision here and domestication rather than direct domination. Yeah. And so we see in Homer, again, you know, she is identified as Potnia Theron. And by the time we get to the Archaic period, she's firmly embedded in the Olympian family structure, right? This does not necessarily erase her wild domain, but it frames it, right? She becomes a goddess who operates at the edge of the city rather than outside of the divine order entirely. But we're going to see that even there, she overflows, right? So while we see this cultic repositioning, right, because many of her sanctuaries are on mountains, outside borders, in marshes, at coastlines, right? These are interesting transition zones. And they're purposely done so, right? We also see her more and more inside the city. So, of course, we see her in Sparta. We see her in Athens. We see her at Brunon. We see her everywhere. You know, we see her at Mycenae. Literally, in every city, we see a temple or two or four to Artemis. So it's really important that we recognize that while the mistress of animals, even in the guise of Artemis, expands her authority over the wild, there is a push, a movement to also bring her into the city. Yeah. And in this change between mistress of animals and Artemis, we see that she doesn't actually civilize animals, right? She regulates the wildness, but she doesn't civilize animals. And so the animals with her, other than the dogs, tend to be wild animals, and she keeps them wild, if that makes sense. So Artemis becomes an interesting contradictory figure. And this explains why she becomes a contradictory figure, because she is both she's both protector and destroyer. She's both the guardian and the threat. Yeah. And these are not inconsistencies. I think sometimes modern readers go, I don't understand how she can be two things. But then you ask yourself, how can she not be two things? Greek theology inherits her, right? And that, like I said, contains her in this container called Artemis. But actually, she is much, much more than that. The mistress of animals is old and powerful. But then we ask ourselves, why does she become so difficult to recognize in later tradition? Yeah. And I think part of that lies in classical aesthetics and, of course, in civic ideology. So now we're moving forward by the 5th and 4th century BCE. Greek culture tends to increasingly favor gods who are legible within the city. So we get a lot of anthropomorphic forms. We get narrative coherence. Moral alignment becomes more important. So deities that are associated with excess or danger or uncontrollable space, they become harder to integrate. Yeah. Yet Artemis survives. Yeah. Artemis survives. But her most unsettling aspects are often displaced onto marginal cults or rural sanctuaries or non-civic rituals. So what I mean by that is she becomes more and more the guardian of domestic ritual, particularly around marriage and childbirth. So she becomes more and more heavily leaned into as the remover of the wild, like at Brunon, where we're told that young women lose their youthful wildness and offer it to Artemis in order to prepare for domesticity and marriage. Now, we're told that by men, right? Like, no one knows what happens at Brunon. No one knows what those young women were taught in those rituals. No one knows what they did in those rituals. I mean, it's a mystery altogether, right? We are told by male writers what might have gone on, but of course they never attended. They don't know, you know? And of course, women themselves that were participating in these rituals might have told their husbands or fathers or brothers, oh yeah, that's what we do for sure. Like we totally, totally lose our wildness and we become such good wives. Right. And I think as women, we know all the conversations that go on when we gather. Do you know what I mean? We know all of the things that go on when we gather. And so I would say that the wild rituals were probably quite fun and quite wild. And I think young women were probably taught a variety of ways to handle domesticity. Perhaps not many of those ways being very soft. And I'm sure that women passed on their knowledge and understanding of both what it means to be married and what it means to be a parent and what it means to be a wife, as they do today, you know, as they do today. And so while the Greeks really tried to domesticate and control, while the Greeks tried to control the mistress of animals that control the wild, they failed epically, right? They failed epically. But, you know, the trends of the time are all we have as far as literary trends and perhaps even visual artifact trends. And so we start to see Artemis become, again, more maideny, more less terrifying, less overwhelming, a lot of deer, you know, which I think many people view as sort of harmless animals, right? Herbivores, that kind of thing. And so the wild becomes a metaphor slowly over time rather than actual lived space. And with the Romans, when the Romans comes in, the Roman reception of Artemis accelerates the shift because Diana inherits Artemis's domains. But Roman law and Roman religion really emphasizes order, state stability, that kind of stuff. And so the mastering of animals for her remains, but her edges are dulled, right? The image of her as a young maiden in the forest persists, less intense, less authoritative overall. Why does the mistress of animals still matter, you might ask yourself? Well, the mistress of animals matters because she resists simplification. I think that's one of the best ways I can say it. She forces us to confront a form of female divine power that is neither maternal nor benevolent by default. Her authority is rooted in danger, in restraint, and in boundary keeping. In ancient context, this power was necessary. So communities depended on hunting, herding, controlled access to wild resources, right? They feared disease, predation, infertility, etc. So a goddess who ruled the wild and who ruled animals ruled survival itself. In modern reception, Artemis is often softened into a symbol of nature and independence, which is fine. But I've been feeling like the mistress of animals disrupts that comfort. Yeah. She reminds us that the wildness is not a metaphor. It's not a metaphor. It is a force that demands negotiation. And so studying this figure, I think, exposes the limits of our categories. I mean, she's not simply Greek. She's not purely Eastern. She's not static. She is a role that moves across cultures because the problem that she addresses never goes away, right? How do humans live alongside forces they cannot dominate? That continues to be an issue today, right? And so I think that's part of the deep dive that I'd like to do because, yeah, she's been on my mind in these ways. Like I said, I feel like Artemis is this massive container, but I feel like before that, the mistress of animals was there, and she is often just delegated as a side figure or a predecessor to Artemis. And something about her has been calling to me more and more. So, if we move beyond the mainland of Greece, Artemis herself begins to look less uniform and far more adaptive. The closer we get to older trade routes and cultural crossroads, the more clearly we see the mistress of animals resurfacing. Yeah. So why does she still matter today, the mistress of animals? Because you will find yourself in museums, you will find yourself in different countries and different places, and you will see numerous images where a goddess stands erect, with animals along her body, with lions, bulls, stags, griffins, etc. And you will say to yourself, oh, this kind of looks like the mistress of animals. Yeah. And I think I'd like to promote that knowledge and expand that knowledge. I think I'd like to talk to you all about how, and I think I have, about how this cosmic sovereign being preserves something that's architectonic, that is so ancient in its composition, that is uncategorizable. That's not a word. And I would really love it if we all were able to look at some of these artifacts as we visit museums and just kind of enjoy the archaeology of it all and be able to see the fluidity of this imagery. So, you know, in Thrace, for example, if we move north into Thrace, Artemis merges into Bendis, right? And Bendis herself can be called a mistress of animals, right? Although she carries torches more as she moves through the night. But there were a lot of, for example, archaic cult ecstatic elements to Bendis. If we move, you know, if we're in Sparta, we have Artemis or Thea. Like I said, if we're back in Acadia, we have Inanna Ishtar. If we go down to Anatolia, we will see Kybele with lions. If we go out to Russia, up north, you know, Balkans and beyond in the Slavic areas, we will see goddesses with animals on either side or animals on, you know, beside a standing figure, a standing a goddess. And like I said, even as far as Japan, there seems to be, of course, sorry, if we're in the UK and if we're in the, you know, tribal period of the Scots, Ireland, UK, etc., all of these areas, and we go back to that, to those tribal ancestors, we will see discussions, not always particularly of a goddess, but of a woman who controls nature. Sometimes she's called a witch, which is a little bit deceiving, you know, but controlling animals and the ability to manipulate the wild in a way that is sovereign, that is authoritative. And so wouldn't it be amazing if we could all learn more about this entity, this pattern, this symbol, and recognize it in the world, yeah, as we travel and as we move through it? I think what that would do is that would allow us to really see the power, the influence of this primordial divinity. Yeah? I feel like I've used all of the words for her, right? So if you would like to learn more about the Mistress of Animals and come into the 6-week deep dive with me, then check below in the description and I'll put the link to the course. There's a join me live every Sunday for 6 Sundays. And then there's also a recording option, which will give you all of the recordings right after we do them. And so you can watch the deep dive. And of course, I also have a group where we'll all be part of the group, so we can have lots of discussions throughout the week and about all of the things that we are discussing. And we will go very specifically through times and places and different cults. And then we'll do a lot of artifact work. And I'll take you through some of the Russian interpretations and, of course, also the Japanese interpretations. We'll go through all of that. So hopefully this is something that has piqued your interest and you want to join us. If not, then I just want to thank you so much for joining me today. If you are one of the members that are on my YouTube channel or Patreon or one of the supporters of the Artemis Center, then go check out the After the Podcast, which is up now, which is an additional sort of bonus deep dive into the idea of Agroterra. So we're going to do a deep dive into Artemis Agroterra, Artemis the wild at the edge of the city. But thank you so much for being here. I appreciate your support and your listening. Please leave comments, questions, anything that comes up for you, suggestions at the bottom of here in the comments, and I will reply to them. I hope that you have a fantastic rest of your week and happy Friday the 13th.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
You're listening to a podcast right now. Driving, working out, walking the dog. If you're into podcasts, chances are you have something to say too. With RSS.com, starting your own is free and easy. Upload an episode, and we distribute it to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, and hundreds more. Track your listeners, see where they're from, and start earning from ads like this, even with just 10 listeners a month. If you've been thinking about starting a podcast, this is your sign. Start free at rss.com.